We begin in Seoul, South Korea. Is a North Korean missile firing imminent? Quote, moderate confidence, says the Pentagon, that North Korea could fire a nuclear warhead of some kind atop a missile. Whatever that means, moderate confidence. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Seoul today saying that North Korea would not be accepted as a nuclear power. He warned against any missile launch.
The rhetoric that we're hearing from North Korea is simply unacceptable by any standard. And I am here to make it clear today on behalf of President Obama and the citizens of the United States and our bilateral security agreement that the United States will, if needed, defend our allies and defend ourselves.
North Korea, meanwhile, says it has, quote, powerful strike means on standby. Could all this be part of the party marking the birthday of Kim Il-sung, the late founder of North Korea? That birthday comes on Monday. We'll see if all of this is timed for that. But it's no party mood in South Korea this week from where the BBC's Dan Damon has been hosting his program, World Update. Dan Damon joins us now from Seoul. Welcome, Dan.
John, good to talk to you again.
Let's begin with the idea that in the midst of all of this, continually, every single day, there are calls for North and South Korea to reunify. I want to play some audio of some of your coverage that you broadcast from the border of North and South Korea. Here's a demonstrator by the name of Chondo Oh.
그 이유는 북한에
You know, North Korea has been threatening South Korea recently. We're demonstrating, calling to live in harmony, not destroying each other. We're here because we want Kim Jong-un to reopen the Kaesong Industrial Complex, let the North Korean citizens have more abundant food, reunite the South in order to achieve peace on the Korean Peninsula. That's why we're releasing doves as well.
Releasing doves. What was that scene like, Dan?
It was moving. There were only a few of them, though. This is an issue which engages the older generation, but not the younger, John, really. If you talk to young South Koreans, and I spoke after meeting that gentleman, I spoke to a young guy just out of his military service, and he said that he really didn't think unification was ever going to happen. It wouldn't be appropriate because the 60-year gap that has separated the two peoples means that they just won't understand each other. And indeed, today I was talking to somebody whose job it is to help North Koreans, those who flee, the refugees, to try and integrate into the society here in South Korea, which is so different. You know, North Korea, as I'm sure most of your listeners will know, is a place of great poverty, of great repression. South Korea is one of the most open societies, one of the most technological societies in the world. It's a wealthy society. People are generally prosperous here. They live extremely well. There are more coffee shops here than I bet there are in Portland, Oregon. And so the North Koreans who come here, they don't find it easy to integrate. I asked this gentleman, what would happen then if North Korea collapsed and you had thousands and thousands of North Koreans to deal with? And he said there would be a tremendous culture clash.
Let's hear one of those voices. Here's 27-year-old Chan Min Chung speaking through a translator on precisely this issue.
South Korea has a democratic voting system, but the leader in the North is the successor of their fathers. Because of that, we have a different life condition, culture. Although we are the same Korean people and use the same language, if reunification happens, it would confuse me.
You know, that's a fascinating statement there, Dan, because as you've spent so much time covering the end of the Cold War in Europe, where the momentum was definitely to restore a history that the Cold War was preventing from moving forward. Here you have a situation where we might think there is a momentum for reunification between North and South Korea, but enough time has passed that maybe that is no longer possible. It's a different dynamic entirely.
It's going to be difficult. My own feeling, and I have to be careful because, as you say, I did watch this kind of thing happening in Albania, in Romania, in East Germany, in Czechoslovakia, as it then was. I do see some of the same symbols of potential collapse because, for example, I've been speaking to one of those refugees who was himself a smuggler, and he told me he was doing deals, bribing people up to the very top of the army. You know, the whole system can't function without corruption. But if it does happen, then it's going to be messy. And I think that's one thing that both South Korea and China, come to that, are concerned about, because the way that the flow of refugees might go is into China, because there are Koreans living in that part of China along the border. But yes, is it going to happen? I don't know. You'd feel it's such an impossible place, North Korea, with so few advantages for the people there who are starving, who are repressed. Okay, they are also indoctrinated, and they do have this slavish belief that the Kim family somehow protects them from dreadful Americans like yourselves, who are, of course, determined to invade North Korea. But that will break down once the society breaks down, and they will be mindless in some ways, not know what to do, so it'll be chaos.
Give me a sense of the tensions there. I mean, is all of this that is dominating the headlines here in the West really affecting the day-to-day life in Seoul, putting a dent in the Gangnam style of pop culture in Korea? How's that working out?
There is a sense of tension here. People live with this the whole time, though. The underground railway system, the metro here, it has a lot of shelter signs outside each entrance. And indeed, if there were to be trouble, that's where people would go. You go down into the subway and into the underground trains, and there are these glass cabinets with gas masks and smoke hoods. The most dangerous part of the North Korean threat, of course, is not missiles. They probably wouldn't be targeted at South Korea. They'd be targeted, if anywhere, at Japan, or indeed, as the North Korean government has threatened, at U.S. bases in Guam, for example. But the danger here in Seoul is from artillery. There are meant to be, or are said to be, thousands of artillery pieces pointing at Seoul. So if there were a war, and generally when you talk to people here, they don't expect there to be one, but if there were to be, that's the kind of thing it would be. It wouldn't be high-tech weapons, wouldn't be missiles. It would be just old-fashioned high-explosive shells raining down.
So let's talk about this missile launch, this imminent missile test, whatever it's going to be. If North Korea has a nuclear capability atop a missile, does John Kerry, Secretary of State, saying this is unacceptable, have any sort of standing in North Korea? Is there any sense that the Secretary of State can defuse this, or is it all, you know, this bizarre theatrics that North Korea really holds the key to because they're the actors here?
Well, if indeed it's true that North Korea does have a missile capable of carrying a nuclear weapon, and it's miniaturized nuclear technology so that it can do that, then I suppose that proves your point, John, that years of diplomacy, years of threats, years of sanctions have not avoided what all of that was meant to avoid, which was North Korea having a nuclear weapon. We know that they have tested nuclear weapons. We know that they have the missiles. The intelligence you're talking about, which came out in this bizarre way in Congress with a question from one of the congressmen, and the way that it's come out leads us to be skeptical. Certainly here they are. Nobody in government or outside of it thinks that they do have a nuclear missile that they can fire effectively. And remember that this is the Defense Intelligence Agency, who are only moderately confident that North Korea has this capability. They were very confident that Saddam Hussein had it, and we know where that went. So I guess people are not particularly troubled, but they're troubled very much by the way that this continues to be the method by which the North Korean government appears to keep the allies at bay and keep its grip on its people. The Chinese are in many ways the key, John, and how they play this is important. Currently, China does a great deal more trade with South Korea. I've got the figures for the first 3 months of this year. They did $63 billion worth of trade with South Korea. With North Korea, $1 billion, and that was mostly sending stuff to North Korea. So clearly the Chinese interests are in the South Korean direction, but then there's the politics, and they still support North Korea.
Finally, before we go, has this mini crisis served to strengthen the South Korean leadership, which was in some state of disarray before the rhetoric started coming out of Pyongyang?
I think people are waiting to see. This is a new president, Park Geun-hye, and her policy was to engage with North Korea. Indeed, I went to see one of the guys whose job it is to try and build some kind of political consensus with the North Korean government. His job is called foundation building, trying to find common ground with North Korea. And he said, our policy is still to negotiate. We want a negotiated reunification. And I said to him, yeah, but, you know, that's not going well, is it? Political reunification seems most unlikely. Collapse of the North is more likely. Do you have a plan B? Do you have contingency plans? He said, yes. I said, well, what are they? He said, I can't tell you. They're secret.
Wow. Dan Damon, host of the BBC's World Update program, broadcasting from Seoul, South Korea. Great work.
It's good talking to you, John. Thanks very much indeed. Anytime.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.